Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding. We also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we were going to have part one of our second anniversary special, but unfortunately, because this place that was fixing my laptop kept my laptop for so long, I have not been able to complete part one of the anniversary special because I have to put so many clips together. So instead, we are going to run an old interview I did with Vince Taylor, and I've never run this interview on the podcast before, so it should be interesting for those of you that never heard it. It was a great interview with Vince. It was done about 3.5 years ago in the end of 2015, I believe, and it was shortly after Vince got the Ben Weider Lifetime Achievement Award from Tim Gardner at the Tampa Pro Show. It's a really good interview, and we're going to run part one of that today, right after our intro here. And I want to mention off the bat that we are brought to you by Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. And it's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banoot and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, and after we have our interview with Vince this week, I am going to read another article for you guys, and this one comes from Muscle Mag International. I've never read one from Muscle Mag International before. I've usually read them from Muscle Builder and Power or Iron Man. Those of you that were around back in the late 70s, early 80s, you might remember Muscle Mag came out with a series of annual issues, and they came out at the end of each year. I think they did like five of them, 76, 77, 78. 79 and 80, maybe 81. I think there was about five altogether. This is from the Muscle Mag Annual 79-80. So at the end of the year, they would cover all the competitions from all the different organizations. And that's what was made Muscle Mag kind of unique. And I guess Iron Man did the same thing. But Muscle Mag covered all the organizations. So they would not only cover Weider's organizations, the IFBB, but they would also cover the AAU, NABBA, the WBBG, Dan Laurie's organization, any big organization that was out there, that they would cover all the shows. So you were able to see all the top bodybuilders from all the different organizations. So these annual issues are great, and I've got them all. And Robert Nalon, who I'm hoping one day to have on the show as a guest, he wrote a lot of articles about Arnold because he was good friends with Arnold. And every time Arnold would come to Australia, he would usually stay with Robert. And Robert would hang out with him. So he wrote this one article called Arnold Came to Dinner. And I think it was when Arnold visited him in 1974. So this is going to be a really good article. So we will read that as soon as our interview with Vince Taylor is over with. All right. So let's talk about what's going on. In the world of bodybuilding, we probably had the most shocking and biggest news ever of the whole year, or maybe the whole decade, this last Thursday or Friday, when it was announced that Sean Roden, our current Mr. Olympia, was accused of rape. And he is being issued a warrant from Utah, where supposedly this rape took place. And it took place on October 12th. So 9 months after it happened, they announced that Sean Roden is wanted for rape. Details are kind of sketchy. I don't know everything, but supposedly, he was in Utah. This was about a month after he won the Mr. Olympia contest last year in 2018. And a girl came to visit him at his hotel room, and he sexually assaulted her, and she told him no. And then she told him somebody was waiting for her in the lobby, so she left. and she went to the police and got told her she was sexually assaulted, and they did a test on her, and they found Sean Rhodes' DNA on her. So anyways, now he is being charged with rape, and soon after that happened, later that day, only a couple hours later, David Pecker from AMI, American Media, who owns the Mr. Olympia contest, they announced that Sean Roden would not be allowed in the contest this year. He is revoked from entering, so Sean Roden cannot enter the Mr. Olympia this year. So there has been tons of controversy, tons of comments on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all about this. Obviously, this is definitely the biggest story of the year. It was absolutely shocking. This has never happened before. We've never had a Mr. Olympia accused of anything like this. The only thing I can remember was like when Sergio Oliva got shot back in 1986 from his wife. But we've never had a bodybuilder accused of rape. So this is unbelievable. Plus, he cannot go in the Olympia this year. So you have the reigning Mr. Olympia, Sean Roden, not competing in the Olympia. And I don't believe Phil Heath is going in it. And I don't believe Kai Greene is going in it. So the contest is pretty much wide open this year. Really shocking turn of events. So this is just unbelievable. And I am supposed to, this Thursday, interview Dan Solomon, who is promoting the Mr. Olympia. I have not talked to him since this news broke. So I hope Dan will still sit down for an interview with me. We're going to just talk about the Olympia and what he has planned. But obviously, this is throwing a wrench into everybody's plans. So I don't know what's changed or what his thoughts are on this. I don't even know if he wants to talk about it. So hopefully he will still go through with the interview on Thursday, and we can have that interview for you guys up next week. And I also called Sean Ray, and Sean Ray said he would sit in with us also. But again, this was all discussed before Friday, before this news broke. So we will see what happens, but this is an amazing turn of events, and it's shocking, and it's sad, and I don't know what the truth is. I don't know what's happening, but I guess it'll all come out eventually. So Chris Aceto, I guess, he went online right away, and he said he criticized David Pecker for not allowing Sean Ray to compete before he was even convicted of the crime. He's just being accused of the crime. And then some people were saying, well, it's just a business decision, because what if he is found guilty after the Mr. Olympia and then he was allowed to compete in the contest? So it's a very cloudy issue. And I guess we will find out more as it happens. And hopefully that interview will go off later this week with Dan and with Sean Ray. And we can have more information for you guys next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. All right. So anyways, getting back to our show, we did get some comments on our interview with Joey Folco last week, which I really liked that interview. I thought it was really good. Joey wrote to me on Facebook and he said, thank you. Great job. Joe Vidras said, great interview, entertaining, funny, and insightful. Highly recommended. Anthony Folco, probably a relation to Joey, said, great interview. Mike Quinn, the mighty Mike Quinn, said, awesome. I love Joe. Such a great man. He has a great family. I won the Teenage Mr. America in 1981. Oh, my God. Teenagers were big back then. Lee Haney is also a Teenage Mr. America. Steven Rocco said, this is going to be interesting and fun to listen to. Doug Brignoli, a champion himself, who we had on the show before, said, wow, this is cool. I remember Joe Folco on the bodybuilding scene during my teenage competitive days. In fact, I think Doug was also in that Mr. Teenage America that Lee Haney won in 1979, and Joe Folco was in it also. Funny thing is, though, I often confuse the names between him and Joe Fusco, with whom I competed in the 1982 Mr. California. Now that I see his photo, it clears up the confusion I had. And Joey said, LOL, Doug, you are awesome. And Anthony Folco said, Mike Quinn, you and Joey were champs, real champs. And then Per Gunnar Olsen sent me some really great pictures of Joey from, I think this was from Muscle Mag. Yeah, it is from Muscle Mag, because he said, here are some pictures and his arm program published in Muscle Mag. And I remember those pictures from when I had Muscle Mag back in the day. And Richard Perillo said, great interview, John and Joey, very entertaining and truthful. Pat Comer said, great interview, real old school views, and I agree with every word. Mark Martinez said, I love the interview, John. Joey was very animated and a great listen. And Gennaro Ferra said, great physique. So thank you guys for putting all those comments on my Facebook page. If you want to email me with any comments that you might have, you can do that by just emailing me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right. And we also got some emails. So I want to read those. Mark Johnson emailed me and he said, John, congratulations on your second year anniversary. I can't thank you enough for the historical catalog of interviews you have provided us so far. I recently went back and listened to your two Chris Dickerson interviews again. Wow, what an incredible individual and a true Bill Pearl disciple. I'm writing you today to ask whether you have considered contacting 1980 Mr. America Gary Leonard for an interview. I recently discovered that he has a YouTube channel, and from the videos, he's still in great condition and very personable. Should he agree to an interview, could you please ask him about his posing routine at the 86 Olympia? Thanks again for all that you do. That's a great idea. And I think I did contact Gary a while back, but I haven't followed up with him. But I think he said he was interested. I didn't know about his YouTube channel. So I will check that out and I will try to contact Gary again. I think he's on Facebook, so I'll try to contact him there. This was about our interview with Ruth Silverman, and it was from Lee. And Lee said, hey, John, hope all is well. The Ruth Silverman interview is, my God, one of the best interviews I've heard on your show. I'm not sure if it's a different format, but it was informative and she was knowledgeable. And her insight on judges and talking about the difference between the former Miss Olympias, Bev Francis, etc. I think you can do two interviews like this or even two parts because I could listen to her all day. Wow, big Ruth Silverman fan. I'll have to tell Ruth about that one. But thank you, Lee, for that email. Then I got an email from Ben Nair. And Ben said, dear John, I tried messaging you on Facebook as well. You and I are alike, two different sides of the same coin. You are a historian and I am an observer. And of course, I'm not as buff as you are. LOL. I came across your podcast by accident when I was checking out a new podcast app that I downloaded. Now I listen to your podcast while working out, and this is the best thing I ended up doing. Keep up the good work, John, the historian. Here's something I would like you to read when you have time and share your feedback. And Ben sent me an article he wrote, which was really good. I did read it. It's called Sergio versus Arnold, Who Was Better? And he mentions me in there. So thank you, Ben. Thank you for your email and thank you for sharing that. Then my friend Scott Barron, one of our biggest supporters of the show. Actually, Scott also wants me to read an article that he wrote for Muscle Mag years ago, where I don't know if you guys remember this, but at the Arnold Classic for a while, they would do a drawing and someone in the audience would win like a weekend with Arnold. You'd get to spend a day with Arnold or a couple days with Arnold. So Scott, I think he was only 19 years old. He won the trip. He won the drawing and he got to go to California. And this was when Arnold was filming The Last Action Hero. So it had to be around 1992, 1993. I think it was 93. And he got to spend the day with Arnold and then he worked out with Arnold. So that was really cool. And he wrote an article about it for Muscle Mag. And of course, they published it. Scott asked me if I could read that. And I said, for sure, I would read it. So he's going to send that to me. And Scott has really been trying to get Bob Paris to do an interview with me. And he's actually been writing to Bob himself. And I told Scott that I don't think Bob was interested because I wrote to him a couple times. And I even mentioned that Scott wrote to him and he never responded. So anyways, Scott did reach out to him again. He said, Mr. Paris, once again, my name is Scott Barron, a loyal fan and a modest Patreon contributor of John Hansen's Bodybuilding Legends show. It is apparent that you have moved on, matured, and have even grown bored with talking about bodybuilding contests over the three past decades. What about a new approach? What about an interview that focuses upon your major role with civil rights? Instead of an interview that simply rehashes your competitions, what about an interview that highlights the people within the art and sport that you admired and loved? Who were the people that supported you and stood behind you when you were courageous enough to come out during a significantly less enlightened environment? Why not an interview that focuses upon the good, positive, and connects on the human level? Perhaps you could discuss life after bodybuilding. Would this new approach be on the same page with your line of thinking? And Bob did write back to him. And he said, thank you for your thoughtful email. This is still the wrong angle. Right direction, wrong angle. I have been burned in the last three or four interviews I've done. I was promised that the pieces would focus on my life now with some history for context. But in every instance, they did the muscle, muscle, muscle. Often scraping up pirated images and clips off the internet. Often stuff or images stolen from my books. Look, I get that a lot of people in the bodybuilding world don't understand and say, oh, he's just so off his rocker, difficult, strange, etc. People said pretty much exactly the same about me back in the 80s when I came out in the media. Problem for me is every time I do an interview that's just about muscle, all my other mainstream, mostly out of public projects suffer. Because in the mainstream world, the muscle thing still pushes regular people away. Bodybuilding did that to itself. It had a chance to go mainstream, but decided to remain niche, corrupt, and off-putting to regular people. So I am very careful and very, very brutally selective in the interviews I'll agree to do. No disrespect intended. And I send you guys only my best. Kind regards, BP. So there you go. You got to respect Bob Paris for his decision, but apparently he does not want to talk about the bodybuilding world at all. So that's just the way it is. We did try, though, and I appreciate Scott reaching out to him to try to intervene and try to get him on my show. I really do appreciate that. Oh, and I want to give a quick plug to my friend Rick Collins. Rick, for those of you who don't know him, is a attorney, and he has helped people in the bodybuilding world for many years. I actually met Rick, God, it was about 2005, I think, when my first book, Natural Bodybuilding, came out. And I had a publicist, and the publicist got me on an interview on the Donnie Deutsch Show. I don't know if you guys remember that show, but it was one of those cable shows where he would bring on like five or six guests at a time, and everybody would be arguing with each other over whatever topic they were talking about. So he was talking about supplements being banned. That was his viewpoint. He wanted to ban supplements because he thought they had like steroid-like effects. And they got me on the show, and it was a publicity thing for my book. And I tried to explain to him that creatine and protein powder and amino acids were all safe. But I was being shouted down. That was my first experience being on a show like that. I was actually doing it from remote. I was living in Chicago at the time, and I went to a television studio, and I sat in a room by myself with the cameraman, and I couldn't even see who I was talking to, and I just talked into the camera. So I didn't even know when I was going to be on until they called on me. So it was kind of a weird experience. But anyways, Rick was on the show, and I remember being so impressed by how Rick really stated his viewpoint. He got his points across. And I could tell, I was like, wow, this guy really knows how to do this for a living. And he's a lawyer, so of course he would. But it really taught me a lot about how to express yourself and be articulate on the air and also get your point across. So anyways, Rick and I have been friends for the last 15 years or so. And he is now counseling people who are in the supplement business. So if you know of anyone who is thinking about creating their own supplement line, which a lot of people are, you can go to his new website, which is supplementcouncil.com, C-O-U-N-S-E-L. And he's also on Instagram at Rick Collins ESQ. So I just want to give Rick a plug. I told him I would mention that on my website, just in case any of you out there know of anybody who's thinking about starting their own supplement line. Rick can really advise you on that. All right. And before we get to our interview with Vince Taylor, I also want to mention that we are brought to you by our other sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. Do you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential? Then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. They have competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So those are just a few reasons to give them a call. So you can call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or visit their website, flalternativemeds.com, and tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. They will give you a free consultation, and they will also give you 20% off your first order. All right, so that is it for our opening. Here is our interview with Vince Taylor, where we are going to talk in this interview about Vince starting bodybuilding after he met Mr. Universe John Brown out in Germany. And then he's also going to talk about competing in the NPC Nationals in 1987 and then winning the Nationals the next year in 1988. And he's also going to talk about competing in his first couple Mr. Olympia contests in 1989 and 1991, where he placed third in both shows. So you're really going to enjoy this interview with one of the legends of the sport, Vince Taylor. Here we go. All right, welcome to the Bodybuilding Legend Show. And my special guest this week is Vince Taylor, one of the greatest bodybuilders of the 1980s and 1990s. And Vince, congratulations. You just got the Ben Weider Lifetime Achievement Award last weekend at the Tampa Pro Show out here in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah, hey, thank you. First of all, thank you very much. And to the organization, you know, that laid that honor upon me. But yeah, it was a fantastic weekend, and it'll go down in history for me.
Yeah, Dan Solomon said this was an award well-deserved for you, you know, because when they talk about the greatest bodybuilders in the world, you know, sometimes your name is not on that list. And he said, with all the pro shows you've won and the impact you had on the sport back in the 80s and 90s, you know, you definitely deserve to be on that list.
Which is true. You know, I felt that mostly, especially after the season's over, your career was, you know, kind of tapering off. Mm-hmm. I want to believe that, because you always want to look back and just go, hey, you know, this is what I was doing. How did I rank among the bodybuilders that you hear names mentioned?
Yeah.
And for years, man, it was like I would listen to some of my idols. You know, they would be in an interview and they would mention, you know, this guy and that guy and this guy. I'm going like, hey, wait a minute. I'm second to you twice. You know, I beat those guys too, right. You know, but nobody mentions Vince Taylor.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, what am I, chopped liver? You know, and for a while it bothered me, right? You know, because you think,
yeah,
you know, I did something. Mm-hmm. Then I go back and I start looking at, what did you actually do? I said, well, I won these shows and I got straight ones and I did the Grand Prix. Nobody's done that. Won 7-8 in a row. Nobody's done that. You know, and then I come through and I come up with this crazy pose routine and shock the world. Nobody's done that.
Right.
But then when you start talking about this guy is this and this guy is that, it's like, no Vince Taylor. I guess I'm truly the quiet storm, you know.
Yeah. Well, Vince, let's start from the beginning and talk about how you got into bodybuilding. I've done some interviews in the past with like Rich Gaspari, and he was talking about like at 13 years old, he started training. But then right. I did one like with Chris Dickerson, and Chris started a little bit later, and you were sort of like Chris, right? You started a little bit training a little bit later in life. You Absolutely. Weren't training at 13 years old.
I had that gusto at 13. You know, I can honestly say, because I recall back in the day going to Sunday school and getting home early and turning on the TV at the Sunday matinee and watching Hercules and the Three Stooges, mm-hmm. you know, and was I just gone with that, you know, Steve Reed's and whew, I wanted to be Hercules.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was just like gone with it. Loved it back then. I was probably 12, 13. Got some of the magazines from the local store, newspaper store, I recall, back in Havre de Grace, Maryland, where I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And, we would go down and my dad would buy, I could see him buying some cigars or something. And I would run in a small little news store right on a corner. I think it's called McAhanny's, actually. And, you know, very, very narrow. You go in, books all over the place. And I would go right back to the bodybuilding books. And I saw the first Dave Draper and Larry Scott's and all these magazines. I'm only 12 or 13.
Okay.
And I was like, gone, man. So, you know, loved it then. Couldn't get into it because it wasn't something that was popular
right.
at all. So I kind of lost it. But let me tell you, I had a good little run training in my backyard. And my dad, he used to own a set of dumbbells he made around ends from concrete.
Oh, okay.
And he would curl them things, man. I'd be watching him like it was like amazing. How could he lift something like that, you know? And I'm sneaking behind the house trying to move those things. Couldn't even move them, really.
Right.
And through all that time, you know, I was all involved in bodybuilding.
Hmm.
But, you know, looking at those magazines, got a hold of Robbie Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a charm because here was a black bodybuilder, and he looked phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want to be like this guy. You know, so I eventually, you know, true story, I even wrote Robbie a letter.
Really?
You know, wrote him a letter. And I remember he wrote me back. I was sitting on my front step, and the mailman came and got that letter. I was like, lost it. His penmanship was incredible.
Wow.
My mother was saying the same thing. Like, wow, you write so beautiful. And he gave me a tip. He just said, you know, train the big muscle groups heavy and train them often. You know, he started talking about arm development and training the back, you know. And I took that as a Bible, man.
Wow.
That's all I was doing. I was training like crazy, doing, you know, the Robbie Robinson thing. So that was like, that was my big initiation, trying to learn everything I could about bodybuilding. And then when I found Robbie, and I just tried it, going back to every Sunday, going back to that after Sunday school, I'm going to there. Look, I'm saving my little 25 cents. Trying to get this magazine, right? Couldn't afford it, but I'm going to read it right there.
Right.
And my dad brought me a set for Christmas one time. You know, a little plastic weight set. I can see it right in a little gray plastic bar and all that.
Right.
I'm in there. They would go to church. I would get out of Sunday school and I would run back home. And I'd be up there on the front porch inside the enclosure training by myself. You know, I was just gung-ho. So one day I was out there training. You always want to – I was trying to maximize my weight training. at that age. Mm-hmm. So I'm putting on one little plate and two little plates. Of course, they kind of like descended right on down to like a little small plate.
Right.
So I was going to be satisfied if I got the whole rack. Uh-huh. So that one Sunday, man, I was just like, I'm ready. I got out there and surprised myself because the night before I told myself I'm going to lift this thing in the morning. And I recall doing it, man. I got three reps at it. First, I did two reps, tried it for once, put it down. I was shocked. I did it. Came back and I said, okay, I'll do three more. So I did three more. I was shocked. So I did eight. So I had the whole rack on. Uh-huh. I was doing it. Of course, I didn't, you know, I didn't realize fatigue was going to set in. That bar came down on my chest. I had no energy to get it off. And I'm sitting there by myself at home with a weight chest bar on my chest. Beside me was my mom's tables, a smaller area. So I didn't know what to do with it. So the infamous roll it down your stomach. I learned not to train alone no more.
Right.
But that's the true story. That was my training in the earlier days.
Wow.
And then I kind of got away from that because, you know, we were into what is it into that?
Yeah.
You know, and school came along, so I was pretty athletic.
So how old were you when you got that letter from Robbie? I never knew about that.
Wow. That had to be 13, 14 maybe.
Wow. Okay.
Had to be 13 or 14 because because I was in Sunday school, so I'm at home looking for some mail every day. But that level.
So your influence level. Did start at a young age then?
Oh, yeah. Like I told you, Steve Reeves, Hercules, my gosh, you couldn't tell me I wasn't going to be Steve Reeves. In fact, it was my intention, goal was to be the first black Hercules.
Oh, really? Because
Hercules would always come in, and he beat up everybody.
Right.
I mean, it's like, this guy's crazy. And he get all the women.
Okay? So my thing was, right.
But I don't see no brothers on there, you know? The brothers be strong, and he'd be beating them brothers up, too. I'm like, I'm going to be the first black Hercules. So that was part of my drive, you know, be that Hercules.
Right.
And later on in long years afterwards, you know, I was hoping I was even try to get that back once I got into bodybuilding.
Hmm.
But never was to be.
Now, what was your genetics like when you were a kid, Vince? Because it seemed like you had great genetics when you started bodybuilding. Were you a skinny kid when you were younger?
Pretty much. Take 5'7" in high school, 150 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. My friend of mine, he was also the same height. I dated his sister. And we used to laugh about that all the time. I was high school quarterback, and he was a wide receiver. And, you know, we always stayed at 150, 155 for some reason, not knowing that if you were going to be anything, they like big kids, you know, for college, all that. Never crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Not thin, muscular, okay. Athletic, very athletic. You know, I did track, I did football, I did basketball. You know, you name the sport, I could do it. Yeah, but I had the body for it. I kind of got into precision or actually analyzing things more to get what I needed out of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
My calves were grown very early, eighth, mm-hmm. ninth grade, you know, because I wanted to dunk a basketball.
Oh,
I spent more time doing calf raises, man, and could jump. You know, I finally got it. I was dunking that bad boy.
Huh.
Played high school quarterback, you know, and also Pop Warner quarterback, you know, young kid stuff.
Right.
The thing was, you wanted to throw far. I needed biceps. So I started doing curls. So I worked on curls and biceps probably just for the purpose of doing those things. And they grew.
Yeah. And those were great body parts for you when you started your bodybuilding career.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So let's fast forward to when you actually started bodybuilding. I think you were in Germany, right? You were in the military and you met John Braun out there?
Mm, exactly right. I lived in Germany, was never in the military. I just worked for them.
Okay.
My brother was stationed in Berlin. I had gone over to visit him for a vacation after I got out of school. And man, it was amazing. Went over there for 30 days, had the time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, came back home, sold all my stuff, and went right back to Germany.
Wow.
So I had to do that. I'm over there. I couldn't speak the language. I just knew I had to be there. So I learned everything while I was there to, you know, the society, the everything by just going back.
What did you like about Germany so much, Vince?
It was just so new. It was shocking because I'm from that small town in Havre de Grace, Maryland.
Yeah.
And Baltimore, you know, it's like, okay, dangerous. New York, I was always afraid of New York. I ain't going to New York and Philly. So growing up, it was confined to that area. And when I reached out, finally got a chance to go somewhere. My first flight was flying to college down in Durham, North Carolina, you mm-hmm. know, trying to go to school down there. That was a nightmare. So when I came back, got my job because it didn't work out. I worked for about a year. And that's when my brother offered me to come over.
Hmm.
And when I flew over there, it was a new world because – 1977. I graduated in 74. 1976, I went over there. And it was just so amazing because all the conversation he and I were having, he always made it sound like, you know, you behind the Berlin Wall, man. You know, the communists is behind the wall. And I'm like, these poor people, they got to have light or music pumped in over that wall. How are they surviving? So, you know, he dramatized it so much for me. Then I had recalled going reading a book, elementary school. My teacher read a book called Escape from Warsaw or Escape to Warsaw. And these kids were trying to get out of Warsaw, get from Warsaw to Berlin. And okay. This was back in the war days. And it was like, wow. So that book stayed in my mind forever since I was small. And then when I had a chance to talk to my brother about being in Germany, and that thing came back together for some reason. So when I was there, I started seeing these things in that book and actually living a portion of that, you know, came to fruition. It was great. But that's how that started, you know. So I was able to go to Berlin, loved it. Fell in love with that place right away. I fell in love with the culture. And my gosh, I fell in love with all the German ladies. It was just amazing. You know, being so smothered in Maryland, you couldn't reach out and get nobody. There was nobody looking this way.
Right.
Germany? Are you kidding me? My gosh. I felt like a king, man. It was like, this is for me.
Right.
And then see John Brown, meet him over there at a bodybuilding contest, and watch the gravity that he had pulling all those beautiful ladies just because he was on stage showing that muscle. I'm like, I got to give me some muscles. That's the way that works. And that's how that actually got ready.
So there was a bodybuilding show going on in Germany and you went and saw it, and that's where you saw John Brown guest posing.
Right, met John. Huh. Exactly.
Now, did you go up to him and talk to him after the show?
Yeah, before the show as well, because what happened was, I think when you're in Europe, let's just flip it back 1979 or 80. This was 81, 82, I think it was. When being a black American in Europe, you don't find too many Americans outside the army. So we had the army fellows over there, but being a civilian atmosphere, right. You know, you're downtown in a different country, you don't see too many Americans walking by, you know. Mm-hmm. So when you see an American and then you see a brother, you know, I mean, that's just an instant. Hey, what's up? How you doing? Just walking by. You're going to acknowledge that.
Right.
But I went to the show and didn't even know John was there. I was had an argument with my girlfriend at the time, and I was just out just driving around. So I rode past the arena or the hall, and it said bodybuilding contest. You know, so I took my little Deutsche Marks out, went in there, sat down. And as I passed him in the audience, you know, he waved and we talked a little bit. Then he was down to do his screen, do his thing. So he called me to him. Mm-hmm. He asked me to come with him and keep an eye on some stuff for him. I said, absolutely, you know, I got your back. So we talked and he's back there warming up and he was asking me about bodybuilding. And at the time I hadn't even done anything. I was like, yeah, I want to try it, you know, I'd love to try. I used to think about it before. And he's looking at me. He's like, man, you got a little small waistline and you got some big arms. You know, I said, ooh, look at them calves, man. You need to try bodybuilding. You got all the essentials right now.
Right.
I'm like, really? So he asked me to hold his money. He was signing autographs. Man, after he did his thing, I was watching him get down on stage, and I was gone. That exhibition he put on, he had, man, 6'2", 250-something pounds, jerry curled down, looking like Michael Jackson, moonwalking and breakdancing on stage, right, and right. Everybody was electrified. Right. I'm going like, that's what I got to do.
Huh.
And the king part today came out in the lobby and was signing the autographs. And he asked me to hold his bag. And I opened the bag up, just a pillowcase. He had all kind of German money in there. I'm like, wow. Then he told me. He said, man, you got to come do what I'm doing and make some of this money. Ain't this crazy? So I held the money for him. He's like, I got to go pose now again. So I'm sitting there. He doesn't know me from nobody.
Right.
I'm
right.
In Germany, right? I got all his money, his pictures sitting there, you know, just that kind of trust. So yeah. I'm like, okay. So he came back, he started signing autographs, and then they were going out to the club that night, and girls were coming up asking for his name. I speak fluent German, you know, and they were, who is he? And I'm like, oh, none better. I got to get these muscles. You know, I can probably stand in the clubs smelling cigarette smoke all night. They just running up on me because I got muscles. That's what happened, bro. I got the bite.
That's a great story.
I'm telling you, it was crazy.
So then you started competing after that?
I did. I took his advice. John told me ABCs. You know, he said, I'm going to tell you three things that are very important for you to remember all the time. He says, the three Bs, eat big, train big, sleep big. If you don't do those three, you're not going to make it. If you do two out of three, you can't stand up. So remember that. So I'm like, okay, eat big, train big. What do you got to eat? Beef. He said, you are what you eat. You remember her eating chicken? You're going to look like a chicken. I'm like, okay. And from that day, he said, beef, man. You put beef. So after we connected like that and he left and I started going to the gym, I wasn't allowed to go to the American gym as a civilian because I didn't have an ID card. So I had to be, you know, sneaking in the gym, you know, and that was a riot. So I would go every Saturday just to play basketball. Mm-hmm. And once, since I got the bodybuilding thing started, so I was up there playing basketball, and a friend of mine, later on to be a friend, they were going upstairs in the gym. I'm like, what's up there? So I kind of walked upstairs, looked in. It was a weight room. And a couple of friends, guys were up there training, made a little friendship to them, and, yeah, man, I'm doing this and doing that. Then I wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. Okay, no more basketball on the weekends and the weekdays. I'm going up there. I'm going to lift me some weights. And that's how I actually got started. I met this fella, man, from Winter Haven, Florida, actually. Huh. And it was Johnson, Delmore Johnson. You'll never forget him. He probably in the Tampa area now. Recently, we just kind of like lost contact with each other. But this was back in 81, 82.
Okay.
So I started training a little bit. I started applying John's theories. I would go over to his work site. He's ex-Army, and he was working for the PX facilities. Like I was working at the gas station, for example, because, hey, couldn't find no job in Germany. And the American facilities, AFIS, was that's what you wanted to be. So I was working for the Americans, got an ID card, therefore I could go to the gym now, mm-hmm. shop at the PX. Before that, I was strictly on the German economy. So I would go down to their work area, and we would just sit around, man, talking about bodybuilding. It was so crazy, okay, so crazy because I knew nothing about bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. He was one trained a little. He knew some stuff, and he was training. I'm watching him. I met another guy from at the time, well, he's from South Carolina, Ron Emmons. You know, he was an MP, and Ron was like 6'1", 6'2", natural bodybuilder, beautiful chest, chiseled abs, you know, knew the game as well. So we kind of meshed a little bit. I'm trying to learn from these two guys. Ron kind of, he was leaving probably about 6 months later, but Johnson was still there the duration I was there, 13, 14 years, actually, in stints. So that early on, we started training together, talking bodybuilding every day, go to work. Lunchtime, I ride over there. We sit around buying grilled chickens, you know, and looking through the magazines. And, you know, Gasparri said this and Haney said that, you know, and these guys. I mean, we were all in it. Pumping Iron, man, that was our theme song. We knew it was hard. We're going to go do some Pumping PI. That was what we used to call it, you know. Uh-huh. It was just great, you know, and that's how we basically got started. And then I decided I would come visit John because I wanted to do some bodybuilding. And he said, man, you just come over here and let me show you the ropes. And I'm like, cool. So I got my little money together, waited for about a year, took that flight to LA. John picked me up. And it was like, wow, never was in California again. You go on the Muscle Beach and all that whole stuff. I got John Brown with me, my idol. Mm-hmm. And when we got there, the strangest thing happened. I'm telling you. Me training a little bit like I'm doing, me looking through the bodybuilding magazines and seeing all these guys. And then this one, we went to the Muscle Beach, and this guy walked by, and John said to me, you know who that is? I'm like, nah, who? I don't know. You know, he said, man, that's Charles Glass. So, okay. I'm like, first thing that dawned on me, this is not a big guy. I'm looking in the magazines, and these guys are like Knight of Champions and everything. You know, I know this by heart now. That's all we do in Germany at lunchtime. Right. We in the magazines.
Right.
Tony Pearson walked by, and he said, that's Tony Pearson. I'm like, come on. These guys are not big. Right. I can get one of these guys now. That's my mindset. Right. That kind of fired me up. Then I stayed with John. He said, come for about 6 weeks. And I lasted about 2 weeks. Only because John was crazy training, man. I met Sean Ray for the first time. I think Sean was 18 years old.
Wow.
Bulletin, you know, I got to the gym. He said, Taylor, this guy over here, Sean Ray, baddest teenager in the world, man. So Sean came over. We spoke. Later on, we went over to Sean's house. I get ready for one of the nationals, I do believe, and one of the shows. So I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool, you know. Then I met Mike Christian and a lot of the other guys.
Right.
And I was training with John one day, and he was doing bench press. I'm not a strong guy. I'm only 160 pounds, 155 pounds at best, then, so 160. And he was spot me. I never forget it. Spot me, Taylor. I said, okay. This guy had, looks like railroad tire tracks on this thing. You know, these big old wheels on that bench. And he got down there and he slapped about four plates on each side. And he hit it a couple of times and put it up. I'm looking at this bar going like, oh, my God. You know?
Then he put another plate on and asked me to spot him. I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to do? All right. So he gets the bar off, and he picks it up, Jay, and that thing started rattling. Man, it was just shaking me from the inside. I was scared to death. What's going to happen? Something happened. That was the first thing in my mind.
Right.
He dropped it down. Aya! Pushed that bad boy up. And he started to take it down again. I thought he was in trouble, so I'm reaching for the bar. Taylor, get off! I'm jumping back. You know. He pushed it up. He pushed it back down. Wow. And I looked at John. I'm thinking, if I have to lift that kind of weight to be a bodybuilder, I'm done.
Right.
2 days later, I called. I said, John, I'm going back to Germany, man. Bodybuilding is not for me.
Really?
No way. Wow. Way. That's a true story, man. John, I tell you, I was like shocked because I'm not a strong guy.
Right.
I'm putting that together. You got to be strong to be a bodybuilder. I'm like, I can't do this. It ain't going to work.
Yeah.
So that killed that.
So when was your first contest then, Vince?
Wow. 84.
Okay.
84, Mr. Berlin. Crazy time. I didn't know anything, all right? I did my beef all the time. Now it's time to diet down, so I started doing some tuna fish and rice. Okay. I got on that thing about almost 3 months. Tuna and rice. I was shredded, I guess. Must have weighed about 150 pounds tops because like my weight was up a little bit off season, I guess, and just shredded down. I was going to pick up my friend, Johnson, at his home or meet him at his home. We were going to drive over to the event, same place I met John Brown, same arena. And we drove over there. And as we were getting ready to park, I was trying to pull into the park behind the arena to park and go check in. And as I turn in the park, this car comes with someone inside and hits me.
Hmm.
So, So that was a big wake-up call. I'm sitting there, people going in and out the building. You know, you're supposed to be there, but you're sitting outside in the accident. So that took about 30 minutes to get clear it up. So people running around looking for people. So when the police let me loose, you know, he stopped the traffic, put us back out on the road. So I'm in the second car in line, the car in front of me, light, you know. So the light changes. I look up, the car, you know, takes off. I look over my shoulder, so I want to turn to my right a little bit. And I looked over my shoulder and started again. Bam, hit the back of the car.
Jeez.
The car took off and stopped, right? So I got two accidents in less than 5 minutes.
Wow.
I'm like, damn. So the cop says, just go ahead over. I got all your information. Just park it over there. See you later. So I parked across the street, ran into the hall, got in there. Trying to check in and everything. So I'm looking for my friend. Everybody was moving around scarcely. And I found him, and he was going out the door. It's on the stage door. So I went out the stage door behind him. So I'm just sitting there, you know, watching the guys on stage. And I'm like, these guys look like my size. He was a heavyweight. These guys look like my size. So for some reason, I decided to walk through the stage doors and put my head back there. And as soon as I did, this guy said, Vince, where is Vince Taylor? So I'm like, here, Benish, you know, like that. He's talking in German to me. Where you been? We're looking for you. I'm started pulling my clothes off. You know, he said, no, forget that. You know, your class is on stage right now. You can go home. I'm like, oh, my God, go home. Yeah, you can go home. You're done. I was like, my buddy came behind me. He said, what's going on? He said, man, my class is right there. I said, oh, man. So then the other guy comes up to me and says, well, you can compete in the heavyweights. That's what my buddy. I'm going like, oh, okay, well, you know, why not? You know, so I'm a light heavy, very, very, not even making a light heavy, really.
Right.
And so I lines up with the heavyweights, and we go out, and they call me out in the first little call out. Long story short, I won.
Wow.
So my buddy, and he was mad, shocked the house. So that's how that started, you know. So that was 1984, Berlin.
Okay. First one. Now, were you using any of John Brown's posing techniques? Were you posing at all like him?
No, I didn't. I was trying to do what I saw him do.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in his home, it was amazing. He was getting ready for the Night of the Champions. And him, I think he had a spat with Tony Pearson. Because Pearson was talking about, well, Pearson was placed ahead of him in some show. And I couldn't figure out, how is that possible?
Yeah.
You 6'2", 240, and Pearson about my size. But Pearson had beat him. And he was posing, and we were in his living room. And he hit. That's when I learned posing. He told me then. He said, "Listen, you got to do stuff on stage, Taylor, to make him cry like that. So you got to get their attention. So you got to be really expressionable on stage, right? So watch this. So he put on Luther Vandross, 'If This World Was Mine,' with Cheryl Lynn. Man, he hit some poses and started swooping and hit them shots. I was like, wow, I want to do that." I got to do that, you know? And that's how I got my buck, watching that first, the way he did it. It was just amazing because shift gears on you and do that breakdance and you're out of this world. I got two left feet. That ain't going to happen. So I kind of wanted to practice that art of what he was doing, that control, and concentrate on what he was trying to tell me is win the audience. You know, give them that smile. Keep that contact going. You know, pose for them. Don't pose for yourself. He started telling me things right away.
Hmm.
You know, how to stand properly, how to project my shape by just turning certain ways. And that was so valuable. But the whole thing, he said, you be creative. You do what you feel. I said, okay. So I feel this song, so I'm going to do that. That's why I started posing slow.
Hmm.
And he went to the United Champions and lost. You know, I couldn't understand it. And I was ticked off because he's my boy.
Mm-hmm.
So he started, you know, we corresponded once in a while back and forth to Germany. He would come over and do some exhibitions. I would know he's somewhere in Germany and try to find him. But I was still on my own thing. So he told me, I'll train you. Just do what I tell you to do and stay true to me, and I can always help you. And that's what I was trying. I was getting my information from him now rather than the books.
Yeah.
So then when I started, man, started training, my body responded very quickly. That was the first thing. My weight went up very quickly. And then started picking out another show because I was want to try it again. And I kept getting second. Everywhere I went in Germany, I started traveling down, you know, behind the Berlin Wall. Started going through the East Germany. You know, this is all, man, exciting stuff now. Okay, you go through the wall and you got to this East German guards taking your passport, giving you the look over 24 times, and then telling you, you know, move on or whatever.
Hmm.
You know, you can't start no international problem back there. You're American,
right?
Take your passport, throw you in a corner somewhere, and you're just stuck in East Germany. Nobody knows you over there.
Wow.
So it was exciting, man. You know, you're driving through West Germany and East Germany, going to these different places in the West. But now I'm like a star because I'm an American bodybuilder from Berlin, you know, training and competing, and these people are loving me, you know. But I just had a physique. My physique was growing. So I was second.
Hmm.
So then after 2000, was 86? Yeah, 85 or 86.
Okay.
I started doing really well. So I came the following year, the guys were telling me, you don't need to compete. You need to be the guest poser.
Wow.
That's what I said, right? Like, wow, okay. So I did a few moves, got a few opportunities to go down in West Germany and pose, which was really good.
Huh.
I met a lady over there. She was second place in the world championships with NABBA. Okay, so me trying to get started in bodybuilding, I was trying to get on the USA team with NABBA, right? And Lance Dreher at the time was in charge of it.
Okay.
So I'm over in Germany trying to find connections. So I'm American over here competing internationally. Can I go to NABBA and compete in the universe? So I had some connections going. People were trying to help me. Lance Dreher was saying, well, you have to come over here and qualify and then go back over there. So we were trying to find a way for me to just stay in Europe and then compete. Vouch for me, this guy who ran a magazine, Sport and Fitness magazine. He was our Joe Weider, Germany. Benno Diamond was his name.
Yeah, I remember that name.
And he's vouched for me, you know, but they wouldn't let me have it. So I had my shorts on, man. I went to London, me and my friend, trying to help me compete. So I got to meet Tim Belknap and a lot of guys, you know, and
wow,
great Jeff King, you know, and all these guys. It's like, wow, you know, but they wouldn't let me compete.
I was
sitting in the audience just watching. I met Brian Buchanan at the same time. He won the show. He was phenomenal looking. It was like, sheesh.
That was 84, right? Right, Vince?
Yeah. I believe it was. That was my touch, my taste. And then I said, well, you know what? Since I can't do that, I heard about the NPC stuff. And it was like, I'm going to go with the IFBB over here in Germany then. You know, I'm going somewhere real. They're going to let me do this.
Mm-hmm.
They basically down in Munich, Germany. Albert Busek was the guy and everything. So I contacted him, and I wanted to join the IFBB. So I did that. And as I was getting ready to make that move, my dream came back to me about being Mr. America. You know, I wanted to be Mr. America all my life since I went to that paper store, since I saw Robbie and everybody, you know. And that one day, I got that notion that they were having a Mr. America contest, but the following year. So I'm training, and I got these exhibitions. And first thing I did was I went out and I won my shows. You know, I was really cool. And come back, and I was going to do the America. So I flew over to Atlantic City. Mm-hmm. I won the Mr. America. And I was happy. My like my class, you know. Didn't know anything about the MPC, you know. Didn't know a thing about it. And I met Phil Hill. He had won his show. And I'm like, people are saying, well, you need to do the MPCs, you need to do the Nationals and all that. I'm like, well, what's the Nationals? So, okay, found out.
Now, Vince, you guys were both in that Mr. America, right? You and Phil Hill in 87? Yeah.
Yep. And I was the light. well, did he do that? I'm thinking, I did that one. I was with him in Jersey at a qualifier for the Nationals. That's okay. What that was.
Okay.
We were qualified for the Nationals. I didn't know who Phil Heath was because, and here we go. This is the story. In London, when they were talking about Phil Hill, okay, and my because I thought I had some big arms, you know, and my conversation was somebody asked about Phil Hill. You know this guy, Phil Hill? I was like, I don't know about Phil Hill, but does he have some of these? You know, I can see this like yesterday.
Yeah.
I threw these guns up because people were always blown away with my arms. So keep that in mind. I did the America. I win the America. I'm getting ready to come back home. Then I find out about this MPC show I can qualify for, maybe to get to these Nationals. So I said, okay, I'll do that. So I stayed there. I did this show. They called the winners of each class, which I was light heavy, Phil was heavy. And when we got to the call-out round, we get ready to go on stage. Everybody was in a circle warming up. This guy comes bulging in beside me like a Brahma bull. Leaned over, grabbed some weights, and started curling. My God, that was Phil Hill.
Wow.
And when I saw them guns he was carrying, I'm like, oh, my God. And I had to laugh. Yeah, does he have some of these? No, he got that and more.
Wow, and the legs. Was,
oh, my God. Oh, don't even talk about them legs. I looked at him like, God. So he won the show. I got overall, of course. And then I went back to Germany to do some exhibitions. So, again, I'm feeling good. I got my new direction. I get back to Germany, and I never really believed in fortune tellers. So my girlfriend at the time was telling me, let's go see one. So we went down, and to this day, the lady said to me, you're going to be internationally known. You're going to be a star. You won't be the biggest, but you're going to be well known. You're not going to make all that big money, but you're going to make a lot of money.
Ah.
Okay. And then she told me, she says, you're going to have three opportunities coming up very soon. And one of them's going to be bad. One will be bad. I'm like, okay, you know. So she went on to start talking. I was feeling great about that. I'm going to be a star, you know.
Yeah.
So when I got home, about a week or two later, the phone rang, and I got a call from a promoter in West Germany who called me and told me he had three exhibitions for me. I didn't put that together quite yet. Mm-hmm. He had three exhibitions for me. So I'm like, cool. So I went down to do the exhibition. I did the first one. I did the second one. The third one, John Brown was there. So it was like, oh, my God, my idol's here. This is going to be nuts. I get a chance now because I filled out a lot. My girlfriend was telling me at the time, you're not as bad as you think. You're not. John is not that much better than you. I'm like, get out of here. He's a pro. You know how you – you bugging.
Right.
And when she said to me, I was like in the back of my mind. But for me, I just wanted to be on stage with John. So John talked his way into posing that night. It was my gig anyway. So we're backstage and warming up, and I will never forget it. The guy calls me and says, Vince, you got 3 minutes. Are you ready? I said, just about. Wait a minute. So I grabbed me a dumbbell. It's like 7.5 kilos, and I'm curling this bad boy about 3-4 times. Got to 5, and pop. I heard this tearing sound. I'm like, what is that? So I looked at my bicep, and this thing was just wagging. So I called John over. He said, Taylor, what's wrong? I said, John, I don't know, man. Look. He said, oh, man, you tore your bicep.
Wow.
So get out of here. I'm thinking, you know, what does that mean, right? He said, oh, man, that's so I can flex it. It was popping, you know. But he said, oh, my gosh. And it got black and blue in my forearms.
Right.
I'm like, so my friend of the friends that I was with there was a surgeon. So he came backstage, and just before he came back, he looked at it, he shook his head. And they said, Vince, you ready? I said, okay, I'll be right back. So I went on out and post. You know, I'm out here doing my little thing. It didn't hurt. You know, it was just crazy feeling because I was just wobbling. So I came back off stage, and John went out to pose. And I'm like, my opportunity is right there. So he went out, and people were clapping. He was doing his thing. Then I just, like, laid it forward. I snuck on stage behind him. People went berserk. They went berserk. And he was telling me the day is he'll tell you. He said, Vince, hey, what was going on? They were clapping for me, going crazy. Next thing I know, they really went off. I'm like, what's going on, you know? turn around, look, and I was walking on stage behind him. I wanted to be on stage with him, and I got that on video too.
Right.
Old school video. I gotta hope get that footage transferred. But you know, we did about a 2-second thing because he said, "Tell, I'm about ready to get busy now. This is my breakdown time to turn this thing out." So I got off the stage real quick. I went backstage, and my doctor said to me, he said, "Listen, you're done. You're done." He said, "You tore this thing right from the. Oh God, you're done." So I'm thinking, well, can you fix it? He just looked at me and started laughing. Can I fix it? He said, "Don't you understand? You're done." I'm like, that's when it dawned on me. I just got started. I'm rolling now. Things are happening.
Right.
You're telling my career is done? I can't train no more? He said, "Yeah, that's about it. Maybe you should take up swimming." Oh, God. So that was a crushing moment. He had me in the hospital 2 days later, and he operated on my arm. And he finished everything, you know, condensing the whole story. He was telling me what had happened. The tendon had pulled away from the forearm. Mm-hmm. So they had to drill a hole through the forearm and pull the tendon through and anchor it so that it would be – the bone would grow back around the tendon.
Right.
And but that type of work, the tendon is probably so unsecure that if you did some pulling action, it might pull out. So he suggested, don't do no more training. You can't do that. And then he suggested I do a different type of training. Use cables if you did anything. So, okay, so – he did it. I was done. But mentally, I'm like, no. I went to the gym and I had my cast on. I'm going to the gym anyway. I'm trying to train one side. I'll just wait till this is ready to go. And it was amazing. 20 inches over here and about 5 inches over here. But it did come around, you know, and I was happy to come around. And then I was coming up into 86, you know, and or 87, actually. And then after that, I was on my way over here to the U.S., you know, to do some shows, try to get into some shows. Which I was walking, I think, the Olympia in New York. Corey Everson was competing that night. I do recall. I think Linda was on stage that night. I hope that's the same show, if Linda was there. But we were in the elevator, small elevator. I think it was at Madison Square Garden or somewhere downtown New York. And my friend and I, girlfriend and I, were in the elevator, small elevator. I won't forget it because the most important thing happened that night. I'm standing in the elevator. The door opens up. We step in. There's Richard Gasparri and his lady. There's Julia Bergman. Now, flashback, I got these pictures in my mind because of magazines, right?
Yeah.
This elevator is small. It's breathing on your shoulder room only. It's like six of us in there. So it's tight. Very, and elevators, nobody talks. Yeah. I step through the elevator, and I look up. I'm like, oh, my God, Richard Gasparri. Richie Gasparri. So I turned to my girlfriend. I said, "That's Richie Gasparri." Right? And Richie was standing in the corner looking straight ahead. Maybe he had a bad night. I don't know. Whatever it was. But I said out loud, I don't know what my friends are going to say when I tell them in the elevator with Richie Gasparri. Oh, my God. So I'm like, got my courage up. "Richie, how you doing? How you doing, Richie?" He didn't speak to me.
Really?
He didn't even speak to me. He was 2 feet in my face. He didn't even speak to me. He just looked right through me. I was crushed. I was crushed, man. I was like, ooh, okay. So I looked at my girl, and she looked at me, and she didn't say anything. Julia Bergman, I recall, because my girlfriend made a comment when she came in about Julia Bergman, because she how small she was. You know, she's like, wow, she's small. And Julia said right away, yeah, but big things come in small packages. You know, so that would be cool, right? So that was nice. And I turned to Richie, man, and he didn't say nothing. So holding that arm in that after cast move, walking up to – that was 86, yep, 86. Walking up to the event, I said to him, he was about 5-6 feet in front of me. I kept saying to myself, I will beat you one day. That's what I kept saying. Why I said that, I don't know. But it just me so hard, I said, I will get you one day. And,
was your arm in a cast then, Vince?
I had just gotten it out.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much just kind of hanging there on the side, you know, just kind of get the thing back right.
Yeah, because back then, people may not realize, but when you had a surgery for your bicep, it took a long time to heal, right? I mean, now I see guys tear their bicep and they're in the gym the next week with a little thing on, but back then they had to put the cast on for 6 weeks.
Four casts. Yeah. I had mine for about 8 to 11 weeks, I believe.
Wow.
It stayed on so long that he had to cut down here into my wrist area because the tendon had frozen up. He had to clean it out. I could barely move my thumb at being in that position so long.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, it was terrible. And that's when I got myself together, saw the event. I remember hollering at Corey Everson on stage, talking about, hey, Corey, smile for my picture, you know. I had a nice time. It was cool. First bodybuilding show there.
Yeah.
And it's gone. Back in Germany, you know, never thinking about Richie no more, but told my friends all the stories and stuff. And every magazine after that day, that was his build up coming up to Remini. You know, I mean, that's they were looking at that a couple of years later.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I came back, as you know. Then I did the Nationals. You know, that was my first Nationals. After I got my cast off, trained a little bit. My friend called me, Ron Emmons. He was in Virginia at the time, so we hooked up again. And I came over, went to the Nationals, and got fourth.
That was your Sean Ray one, right?
That's the year Sean Ray. And yeah. I'm like, wow, you know, people, J.J. Marsh, Sean Ray, and all these guys. I was like, okay, that's the names you hear.
Right.
And I had met Sean before that. Remember I told you?
Right,
like,
right.
That's so cool. And he was posing like John, too. He had that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that was gone, right? So when they said that to me, I remember at the interview after the show, it was Vince, we think you should have been a lot higher. I mean, where are you from, man? Who are you? You know, I'm the German guy, right? And I remember my comment was, if you like me tonight, you're going to love me next year, because I had to take off this whole time to get my arm healed up. And I couldn't train.
Right.
And then I came back in 88 and won the overall national champion. You know, so that was like, bye. And you move forward slightly along. I'm on a high now. I won the Nationals. Didn't know what the Nationals completely was. It was Lee Haney's show. I had met Lee Haney in Luxembourg at a guest posing event. Drove down to see him down there. He walked by behind that curtain, man, the smog, the lights and everything. He was just huge. And I was like, wow. And my girl again, you can beat him. Okay. Like, here we go again, right? That's Lee Haney. So, you know, he's just like God, right? So we spoke a couple of times backstage, and that was it. And then moving further down the road, after the Nationals, that was his championships. I won his championships. He came over to the table and he said to me, he said, Vince, you look like, man, you shocked me out there. You look like me. I'll tell you what I want you to do. He said, don't come out until you're ready. Remember that. Come out and make some of this money, but don't come out until you're ready. I said, okay, you got it, Lee. I'm going back to Berlin. You know, that was my thing. I'm back to Germany.
Now, between 87 and 88, Vince, did you go back to Germany also?
Oh, live there. Stay there.
Yeah.
I went back there in 86, 75 rather. I went back to live. And I didn't leave until 1990.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Stayed over the entire time. Just back and forth, you know. And then when that Nationals things got interesting, because then it was, where are you going to compete at? Once you're a pro, you're going to go turn pro. Man, I'm not ready yet. I was told, don't come out until you're ready.
Yeah.
So talking to Jim Mannion.
When you went into that 88 Nationals, did you feel like that was your year? I mean, did you think that you made such improvements from 87, 88? Because that's a huge show, obviously.
A huge show, which I didn't realize the impact of the show, once again, because it was the Nationals, didn't know nothing about it. Did that first one, but what was it? Wasn't gunning for anybody, did not have any expectations. I just went and trained and brought a physique back that I trained myself into. Was it good or bad? I don't know. But that night, I guess it turned out to be pretty darn good.
Yeah, and people may not realize, but back then, I remember watching that show on ESPN. That was an incredible show. There was some great... Eddie Robinson was in it. And
was talent in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Got it.
I talked to an NPC judge not long after. I think it was that year. It was in Chicago, and they had a national-level NPC judge, and he was talking about your physique and about how great you looked. He said, wow, this guy is really something else. When you see this guy, you know, and I never really – I remember you from the year before, but, yeah, he was saying you had an incredible physique.
That's cool. And, you know, that information I would never hear because I'm back in Europe.
Yeah.
And just looking at magazines and just talking to the guys. And our whole thing was back at the work site again, you know, lunchtime. Look what you're doing, how you rolling, and these guys, are you going to turn pro? That was our conversation. So I'm like, nah, I'm going to wait about a year. You know, I'm going to wait about this year and try to grow and try to do some right things, call John. And my buddy says, man, you need to go to that Night of Champions. So just like 8 weeks before the show, I use an 8 to 10 week diet because I don't know nothing. I'm a rookie. I'm using books and chicken, tuna fish and rice, you know, and Coca-Cola. That was my diet. So he says to me, you need to do that. I'm like, you think? So 8 weeks out, I call Wayne D'Amelio. And he said, yeah, sure. Come on over. Love to have you. So I got ready. I said, dang, we got 8 weeks for the show and I got 8 weeks of dieting to do. We did it. I flew over, met my buddy Ron over there. We went to New York and won the Night of the Champions.
So your first pro show, the Night of the Champions, you go in and you win.
Win the Night of Champions. So you can imagine, man, I was just gone. And all I was hearing after that was you did it. It was a great show, man. You won convincingly. You're going to the Olympia. I'm like, the what? The Olympia? Why would I want to do that? You know, you just won the Night of Champions. Yeah, but that's the Olympia, you know. So left it at that. But made my mind up to go. Wasn't going to do any damage. Just going to be gone. It was a big show. I made it a chance to get there, so I'm going. Went back, trained my own way. I've always trained myself, by myself. In fact, my buddies were training their thing. Mm-hmm. Always trained my own way, did my own thing. So got ready for the Olympia, man, and came back over. And that was beautiful because two things happened that night. I won, and something very, very special happened. When we lined up that night, many things happened that night. Actually, the day before, I met Lee and Shirley. I had my girl with me as well. And we were talking, and this night was so huge because this is Remini. This is Richie's ancestral background. You know, really, he's supposed to come home and do this. Right. Weeder and everybody's talking about how huge this is. And this was really affecting Lee because Lee was saying all the time he's been seeing things and hearing things that weren't particularly kosher, you know. And we were talking, you know, and he was kind of upset about it. But he came ready. The boy was ready, you know. And, of course, they were doing a lot of things with Richie, and Lee was getting last-minute calls, and he was kind of perturbed about that. Hmm. So we get over to the venue.
So he thought Rich might have an advantage because it was in Italy?
Oh, absolutely. He was saying that there were so many things going on. He said, man, this is part of bodybuilding that you got to learn. You know, it's not always how you look. It's where you are and what the agenda is, you know, down that line. And I was like, okay, I feel you, you know, because it's a lot of things can happen a long way from home. I said, gotcha. I know what you're saying. So Lee was getting ready. He didn't take anything to leave anything to chance. He looked great. Mm-hmm. We lined up. You know, that's the beautiful part. We got on that stage, man, I pulled my numbers, and everybody's waiting. You know, the cameras are there. Lee and Richie, and, of course, Labrador was there. And everybody. I mean, the whole nest was there. I'm looking at all these guys, some of them for the first time. And I'm like, okay. So I think I had number three. I was number three in the lineup, or four, okay. Something like that. It was Lee, what's the name? Somebody else. And Gaspari was standing right beside me. Two other guys, and I think Barry DeMay and somebody going around the circle, right? The other half. So we stood there, and it's about ready to go off. This is high noon. It's going down. I know it's going down because the expectation is Gaspari looked great. You know, he's here to win this stuff. And Lee was, it's tense, you know. I'm like, wow, this is great. So the first thing they did was called out, you know, Lee Haney. So Lee goes out. I'm like, damn, this is good, you know. Then Lee Labrador. I looked inside, Labrador out. And Richie was standing beside me, man. He was getting ready.
Right.
Vince Taylor. I was shocked. I'm like, whoa. Jumped that high off the ground, you know.
Wow.
I went there, man. We started throwing those poses down. And came back in the lineup. I swear to goodness. Came back in the lineup, was standing there, and Richie turned to me and he said to me that he was shaking. I looked at him, and the first thing registered in my mind was Val speaks. Now you speaking to me? I just leaned over and said, listen, tense a little harder, you'll stop shaking. Simply, you tense hard, you're going to shake more.
Right.
And he tensed harder and shook like a never mind. But he was shaking like a leaf over there. I said, idiot. But because I was so angry with him because he didn't talk to me.
Right.
And you can't bet against people because you never knew what happened.
Right.
But that stayed with me, man. And when he went out there and I nailed him and got that third, and Labrador was second, and we put that first nail in Richie's coffin. And after that, Gaspari was done.
Wow.
Every show after that, he was done. So that was, for me, the highlight of that night. And outside, in fact, I got third.
Yeah. Well, that was a big deal because Gaspari had taken second 3 years in a row.
Sure.
So, you know, for you to come in as a new guy, the rookie, and then – and I did an interview with Rich, and he was talking about how when he won his first Olympia, he got third place. You know?
Gotcha.
And now you were the guy that replaced him. You know, you sort of pushed him down, and you took third place.
After that, man, it was like, you know – and then you saw how things were developing. Now you're among the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
And that's when it got serious for me. It was like, man, I got to start thinking about where I'm going to live. Maybe I should go really and be serious about this bodybuilding. I'm still in Berlin.
Right.
You know, so maybe I need to come back to the States and figure out where am I going, East Coast or West Coast. And then Florida won.
Oh, yeah? You decided to come back to Florida? Yeah.
I saw the Nationals for the first time, and it was beautiful in Miami. I'm like, wow, Miami Vice was on TV at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
These pelicans all over the place. And pink everywhere. I came down here, and it was just beautiful. It just blew my mind. So I'm going like, Florida, hurricanes, earthquakes. Right. With kings, you know. So it was Florida. I'm glad I did that because it's been beautiful ever since.
Wow. All right, let's talk about the 1990 Olympia events. That was the year they started to do drug testing. They did it at the Arnold and the Olympia. And people had different views on that. You know, I talked to, like I said, I talked to Rich Gaspari. He said he thought it was bullshit. I think he said most of the competitors thought it was bullshit because there wasn't like a really good testing procedure. Gotcha. I think like 8 guys failed that year. So how did you feel going in knowing that it was going to be drug tested?
That's a very good question, too, because I'm a rookie. I'm in Germany. I don't even know what's going on. All I know is they're going to be testing. So at the time, I'm using some XYZ, and I'm told that you can't use XYZ. You can't use anything.
Right.
So like, okay, so I won't use anything. You know, I mean, cool. So I didn't do anything. I just showed up, and I was looking like the guy who took third is now the guy who looks like, you sick?
Yeah.
You know, you don't look too. Where's your body?
Right.
You know? And when I saw that happening after the first call-outs and my stuff wasn't being called out, I looked around and said, wait now, I can't have this look. So I went backstage, get me some water and a towel. And Joe Weider was backstage, and he turned to me and he said, Vince, are you okay? I said, I'm just feeling a little lightheaded, Joe. First thing he said was hypoglycemia. Okay. He said, if you're not feeling good, Vince, I can hear him now. You don't have to go out there, Vince. If you're not feeling good, you can stay out. You don't have to do it, Vince. I said, okay, Joe, thank you. I put my clothes on, and I left.
All right. Wow.
I went out the auditorium. I went up to the back of the theater. I watched the Olympia from that viewpoint back there.
Really?
Because I knew that I didn't have what I needed to be on stage with these guys.
Right.
And then to see these guys, I'm like, oh, somebody didn't get the memo.
Yeah.
Okay. Some of them did, and some of them said okay, and some of them didn't get memo because they was charged up.
Right.
So I go, okay then. And that's what happened to me. I got out of that thing.
Yeah, that's the way it seemed to me too. I was at the show because I lived in Chicago at the time, and it seemed like, you know, a lot of the guys were off from their best. Like Lee Haney was off at his best, but some of the guys were, you know, like Mike Christian was better than ever.
Labrada?
Yeah.
I was like, sheesh. So I don't know what they're doing. Whatever the secrets to this game is, obviously I'm a rookie. I don't know these secrets, and you got to learn the game as you go along.
Right.
But don't go down in flames. Be smart enough to know when to get out.
Yeah, that was smart. Okay, so now we go into 91, and you go into the Ironman.
Right.
And you get fifth place there.
That was one of those shows that I was trying to simply adjust. You know, I wasn't really dial it in. My philosophy was, you're going to do a string of shows. By the time you get to that show, you're going to be better. You just need to qualify and then keep dialing in until you get to the show that you want to compete in. Yeah. I kind of used that approach every show I did and did a few shows in a row just to do the ones. So, yeah, I came in fifth on that show. Wasn't in good shape. But then the game, the show afterwards.
Yeah. Well, then you go to the 91 Arnold right after that and you move up to third place, and J.J. Marsh, who won the Ironman, drops down to fourth place. So you only got beat by Sean Ray and Renel Janvier.
Yep. And again, I credit that to me just being still a rook, trying to get my body right, you know, and it was like, okay, you're going to be okay. Just get back into this thing. Now you're learning a little bit more.
Right.
So then I started turning the screws properly. I started doing things that made sense to me. And I think those changes I was able to come up with put my body in a different projectile.
Right.
And I was going a different direction.
All right, so now let's talk about the big one, the 91 Olympia. And this was very cool for several reasons. First of all, you go up to third place again. Mm-hmm. But not only your physique looked better than ever, but the posing routine, as Bob Ciccarillo was mentioning over the weekend when you got your Ben Weider Lifetime Achievement Award, the posing routine was phenomenal. And I remember at the time I was reading Iron Man, and Lonnie Tieper, the Swami, was criticizing you, saying, yeah, he always does this slow music and stuff. So where did you come up with this idea, not only for the Terminator routine, which really changed posing, as Bob said, and it really did, but also, which I thought was really cool, was you called out Sean Ray and Lee Labrada in your posing music.
Interesting story there. Doing what we always doing, getting this prep going, it was fine. Everything was going on schedule. Chris Lund had came down and shot some pictures at the beach, and he was just blown away. He was like, wow, God, Vince, you look phenomenal.
Yeah.
I didn't see that until I saw the picture. I was like, okay, that's me. So the training went well. 2 weeks, let's go 3 weeks out. I come to the gym in Gold's Gym in Pembroke Pines where I was training, and the guys were saying, "Wow, man, Lee Lombardo was in town. He's at the gym that we used to go to." I said, "Okay," and they were doing a seminar, and they asked the question, "Do you what do you think of Vince Taylor?" And Lee Lombardo said, "He's no competition for me." I'm like, "Ooh, well, I never beat Lee." You know, so I have nothing to say. He's like, "Man, you don't come down here and disrespect my boy." My boy, they were going off. My boys were just like, "Man, I got on his behind. You don't say that to my boys." So they was like, so they tell me they did with Lee.
Yeah.
So, you know, we let that go. I mean, wow, you know. The following week, Sean Ray comes to town. And again, somebody asked him a question. "What do you think of Vince Taylor?" Because it was like deja vu, you know. And Sean says, he's like, "Any competition, once beaten, always beaten." I'm like, "Okay, I didn't beat you either." So what am I legitimately going to say?
Right.
So we're going to move off. It's about 2 weeks before the Olympia. And my wife and I had saw the one show. We were talking about the posing of the women versus the guys at the Arnolds. And she was saying, the guys don't do nothing. The women are so entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, well, they allowed to be because they can hit poses and be looking kind of feminine like they need, should be.
Yeah.
We can't do that.
Right.
Said, yeah, but you're so boring. You just go do this and grunt this and do this all the time. You know, so we started thinking. I was like, yeah, okay. Even my routine, the slower routines, were saying you're still going one way. It's classical,
mm-hmm.
you know, but there's no hurrah in it. I said, all right. So the Terminator was coming out or had came out. Predator was on TV. I came out, and I saw both movies. So we were sitting – this is 12 days – 15 days before the show. We were sitting downstairs in my home right here watching TV, and I'm like, wow. I'm flipping the channels, and this guy comes on TV, our dance show, and his name was DJ RoboCop, okay? And I'm watching him. So he comes out, and he has these glasses on the top of his forehead. And when he starts his routine, he comes out making the sound effects with his mouth, and he's you know, and he drops his glasses down like that, and he starts walking. I'm like, RoboCop. I'm like, wow, you know. And he's doing this, and this is coming over so clearly.
Yeah.
This is great. So I saw him do that, and they started dancing and stuff. So I was like, okay. So then I started thinking. I said, what if we? I was telling the wife out of nowhere. I said, what if we started to do something a little bit different? She says, well, what you got in mind? I said, listen, threw on Arnold's, and Arnold was walking into the club looking for Sarah Connor, okay? And you see him radaring through there and everything. And I'm going like, what if we did this, right? We stopped that, and then we did this movement, him coming in and searching. And then when he finds somebody, he founds, I'm looking for, he's no competition, once beaten, always beaten. You know what I mean? Let's go after – let's terminate somebody. That we were just joking around with it. And I said, let's get Sean and let's get Lombardo because they are, again, above me in placing, you know, except for that Olympia. Sean wasn't there in 89. So it's like, okay, I figured this one out. So then I just decided to put some songs together. So we found KLF for Sean because it was Vengeance approved. You know, I said, that it's hitting hard. It's really sounding – it's bumping. You know, the crowd would probably like that. And then I said, we moved it out transition-wise. I kind of had everything worked out. Just we were doing this like 20 minutes,
wow.
Okay? And I'm like, okay, Lombardo, what can we do with Lombardo? And I was like, Mama said, knock you out. That was the top one. Mama said, knock you out. And then you listen to the lyrics of Kujay singing that song, and the lyrics were perfect, right? You know,
yeah.
Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm like, wow. So what we did was we got the idea together. Then the question was, where are you going to get the sound effects from? You know, I was doing this one friend of mine, his radio station guy, and he was making my cassettes for me. You know, you pull them over and cut them and all that stuff foreverness. And he said he had a friend who made sound effects. I'm like, cool. Let's talk to this guy. So I called the guy. We spoke. And he said, okay, let me throw something together. What are you trying to do? I said, I would like to make some sort of robotic sound and walking noises. And he just threw that together for me.
Wow.
I said, that's perfect. You know, so now I need the voiceovers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do my own voiceover. He just put them through a reverb and everything. So I did
right.
my own voiceovers. He did that. He spliced the music together. This was 7 days before the event. This was
no
a Tuesday.
Kidding.
Leaving next Wednesday.
Wow. Okay?
So I got the music on Tuesday, the recording. Never practiced it together. You know, the concept was there. We got it. So I had to do some working with it. So by Monday, We tried to put it together and worked on it. Tuesday, time to go. Wednesday's time to go. So we had the routine. I practiced like twice. And I said, you know what? This is good. But the thing about it is we setting ourselves up, okay? Because what we wanted to do, it was one of those things that says you target these guys because you want these guys. But at the same time, you want to bring a whole different approach to your thing, and you want to give Mr. Olympia his due respect, mm-hmm. okay? And that's Lee. So I'm like, and for Lee, why don't we just self-destruct? That was cool, too. You know, these things just popped into my mind. So I was like, okay, let's do that. So we did that. He put the music together for me, the sound effects. And it just worked out so perfect.
It was perfect.
It hit. Oh, my gosh. But I said, if you did not beat those guys that night.
Yeah.
You look kind of stupid.
You were taking a risk. Yeah, big time.
Yeah, but man, when I hit that thing, man, and nobody will ever know, I was cramped up so much throughout the prejudges. It was ridiculous. I couldn't even move. My girl, CJ, she was backstage trying to help me out with salt and everything else. And every time I moved, my abdominals were cramped, which is typical.
Yeah.
And we came back that night show, and Ben was talking. And all the times that Ben Weeder would talk, I was like, man, please be quiet. He talks so long.
Yeah.
That night, I was so glad he was talking, because when he finished speaking, we started the show, and my cramps had just subsided. Just started to subside during that. So I was really ginger. If you ever watch that routine coming out, I open up the song, and as I'm doing my routine, moving around, I'm not even contracting. I'm kind of holding it because I don't want this thing to, you know, freeze
right.
up on me.
Right.
And it didn't. So after I felt a little loose with it, man, and the audience, when they started hearing it, they was just losing it.
Yeah.
I get excited about it today. That was my one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
That was.
Yeah, I think the audience was shocked. They didn't know what they were seeing, you know, because you come out and you do your normal slow posing routine, and then you stop, and then the voiceover comes out. And like you said, back then, nobody had ever done that before, and the audience was totally into it. Then you're doing your arm thing, you know, loading the arms up and stuff. They really got into that. Yeah.
It was great. Wow. I just got to say, that was something that, man, but for my wife saying we need to change something. And again, just throwing that idea together. It just came out of nowhere. 20 minutes it took. 20 minutes.
That's amazing.
We had concept. It was like, let's do this.
Yeah, I didn't know you just put it together in the last 2 weeks. That's crazy.
Yeah. We didn't even have the music. We didn't even have the sound effects. We got them, like I said, we got the sound effects on Saturday. We went up to get them. He wasn't available. We got them Sunday night. So we're leaving Wednesday. Sunday night we got them. Monday, I was trying to practice this thing. And Tuesday, dry run it. It's time to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to work?
So tell me your thoughts on Lee Haney, Vince, because it seems like you always had a reverence for him every time you competed. And then, like you said, in that posing routine, you didn't beat Lee Haney. You said, I'm going to self-destruct instead of, you know, once you face – I remember you looked up when you mentioned his name, and then you looked self-destructed. So tell me your thoughts about Lee Haney.
Lee, wow. From the first time I met Lee in Luxembourg at that guest posing coming through, and who he was as far as bodybuilding, the king, you know, it was just such an aura about Lee. And it was just like, man, I'd love to meet this guy. When I did, it was really friendly, really nice. And then to be competing and be somewhere associated to him because of my ability to be competing and placing so high, it made my relationship a little closer. You know, I was a friend, but at the same time, Lee would tell you, man, you was a threat. You know, I'm like, shh, you kidding me? But I just had so much admiration for Lee because of what he was doing. And just as friendly as he could possibly be. I'm older than Lee, you know, much older. And it was just the fact that I appreciate him so much. First time I saw him, I think, compete was in Munich, Germany for the Mr. Olympia. I think Samir won that show that night.
Yeah, 83.
I drove down there, the first bodybuilding show I've seen of that magnitude. And I saw Lee, and he was disappointed that night. I thought he should have won. Bertel Fox was my next idol. You know, like, met Albert Beckles and these guys. But with Lee Haney, it was just association, and every big moment, I would be right there. It was something crazy about that. 89, the first person to give him them congratulations was me.
Mm-hmm.
I had the prayer hug on him on stage.
Yeah.
Okay, that major move. 91, when he got that milestone, I was the first one there again. You know,
yeah.
So I'm always there, and that was something I just treasured. And knowing him, we're good friends. I just had this thing about, you know, this is quality. That's how you want to present yourself as Mr. Olympia, as a person, you know. And he told me as well. I would call him from time to time, and he broke it down to me as well, kind of like John. He said, these are the rules of the game, Vince. He said, you got to remember that you're going to be watched on and off stage. So you need to be professional on stage as well as professional off stage. You don't want in the Mr. Olympia group that you're in, top three, you said you hold a certain light upon you that you don't want to be known as the playboy running around here chasing women. It doesn't look good for you on stage. You know, they don't want that. They want this wholesome look. So conduct yourself. And he kept telling me over and over, he said, you don't want to do that. You know, be you, be conductive, be straight. And it was just guidance, you know, and the empathy of what he said, that was him. So I wanted to follow that image, follow that look. Never went wrong. Just love the guy so much.
Yeah.
You know, only times when you have love and hate is with Lee. You know, as others, I would hear, if you talk to me about a bodybuilder, Lee Haney, I'm going to tell you, boom, 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 boom. Yeah, I saw interviews about Lee, and he's talking about bodybuilders. Competing with some of these great guys, these young lions like Sean Ray and this guy and this guy and this guy. What about me, Lee? You know, what about me? Never mentioned my name. You know, I was like, and so many times in interviews, that's when I started noticing it. Not only Lee, but nobody. You know, my name was, I'm like, so that was the kind of things that made you go like, okay, you know, I love the guy. But you could at least throw me a bone. Okay, throw me a bone. I won your nationals. You know, I ran second to you or third to you twice.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not lunch meat. But I don't know. That was just one of those things, Jake. One of those things. But Lee, no, I can't take nothing away from Lee. In fact, he texted me just the other day. Follow me, what I'm still doing, you know, and son's career and track and everything. And, you know, God is good. And he's always been there. We shared some really good moments flying back from, I think it was the Arnold Classic or one event. And religious moments, because, you know, he's very religious.
Yeah.
And we were talking about scriptures of the Bible, and he wrote me a letter and indicated some chapters or some scriptures I should read. Still got it today, you know, and we talk about that sometime. But he's just that type of person.
Yeah,
you know, I just have a lot of love for Lee Haney.
Yeah. Going back to that 91 Olympia, Vince, let's talk also about Dorian Yates, because Dorian, that was his first Olympia. He came in sort of out of nowhere and took second place. He was the next big thing coming up. What did you think about him competing against him?
Well, we had to learn Dorian from the hype first.
Yeah.
Because, my God, he was getting every cheerleader from the IFBB you can possibly think of. Wayne D'Amelio, you thought that was his second son. we're at the event in Italy. And me, Lee, Albert Beckles, some kind of champions night. We went over there as exhibitions.
Okay.
Group of us. And the Italians were over there dieting and training. They were selling it as the battle of the champions or something. So we went over there and got our butts kicked pretty much. Like, what are we doing over here? We're coming over here fat and happy. These guys are in shape talking about a competition. So I recall sitting on the stairwell, myself, Linda Murray, Lee Haney, me, my wife Randy now, and we were talking. Wayne, he came walking by. So we saw sitting on the stair. We got to see this moment. In a hotel room, old type of hotel. We, Mr. Olympia, Miss Olympia. You know, we're sitting on the stairwell talking. Right. And somebody had stole Linda's money as soon as we got there. Broke in her room and stole her money. So we're later, about a couple hours later, we're talking. And Wayne comes up, and he's sitting there. And he's talking about, yeah, Lee, there's this guy named Dorian. You know, and he can tell you when he's going to be ready. He can tell you, predict to you the time and day he's going to be in top shape. He was just harping and harping and harping. That, Lee was getting a little aggravated. I could see it.
Yeah.
And so it says, one thing, here you are, the judge and everything else. You hyping this guy like he's coming to get me. And all Lee told him was, I'll never forget it. He said, well, I'll tell you what. You know, you tell him to bring his Twinkies. It's going to be a long day. Man, I've used that line forever, okay? You better bring your Twinkies because it's going to be a long day. So when he said that, but Wayne was just, I mean, telling you, Wayne D'Amelio was going on talking about Dorian's hairdo, his everything he did and how well he does it. He'll be at the show and he's the next threat and going on, and he finally left. Well, then 91 show, I'll tell you exactly what happened. We're sitting up there in Orlando.
Yeah.
And two magical things happened. Everybody was waiting for Lee. Okay. I'm backstage. I talked to Lee earlier, and everybody's backstage warming up. There were some big doors behind the warm-up room, and as we walked out, those doors were closed. Joe Weider was standing in the back. He had came in. He was standing in the back. Dorian was to the far left, and Sean was behind Dorian to the far right of him. I can see it right now behind me. And Dorian was being looked at. He was being oiled down, you know, and by Joe. Okay. Hey, look at that. You know, okay. And I'm standing there, and the guy says, "If you win tonight, I'll give you an extra $50,000."
Wow.
I looked at him. I was like, damn.
Extra $50,000. So,
extra $50,000. That's what he told Dorian. I'm standing right there.
Yeah.
I'm standing right there. I'm looking at him like, okay. So, and the heat is on because everybody's talking about him dethroning Lee. You know, so, I mean, the hype is on. The heat is on. 5 minutes later or so, Lee finally comes in. So Lee comes in. He's standing in front of me. And I said, man, Lee, they got the daggers out, man. And Lee turned around. He had a jacket. I can see it right now. NPC jacket on. And swole up in it, too. So he's standing with his back to me. He looks over his shoulder. And I said, Lee, man, they got daggers out, man. I just heard some crazy shit back here like that. He said, man, don't worry about it, Vince. Don't worry about it. He took that jacket off like that. Dropped that jacket down. Boom, I'm ready. Because everybody was watching.
Yeah.
Everybody was watching. When he dropped that jacket, that back jumped out, chiseled so detailed. Sean Ray's face hit the ground because Sean thought he's going to do well that night. Dorian looked up, and then he looked right down real fast. I looked at all both of them and just started laughing. I said, yeah, baby. Yeah, let's go do this like that, you know. But and Lee, he was ready.
Yeah, yeah.
The intensity backstage was more than it was in 89 in Remini because this was a much bigger stake for Lee. And the heat was on, man, because these people were pushing Dorian like nuts.
Hmm.
Nuts. So when they came out and that size he brought with, that took him out of the grab of most of us because we weren't that big.
Right.
They were looking for big now to, you know, to match Haney. So if you're going to be big and you can match up with Haney, you know, start looking for third, fourth, and fifth.
Yeah.
That's how I took it, even though I heard, you know, Sean talking about winning and some of these guys talking about winning. And I'm like, are you in the same planet as I am? People used to ask me, you going to win tonight, Vince? Nah, man, no way in the world I'm going to win tonight.
Right.
Why would you take that attitude? Look who's competing. I'm not stupid. Okay, I don't care how many protein shakes I drink and reps I do. I'm not going to beat no Lee Haney.
Right.
Man, beat Nick this year and or next year.
You know?
So I never went to a show going to gun anybody down. I kind of looked at everything and said, do it tactfully.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that you can beat, the ones you've already beaten, stay ahead of those guys by beating them in each round.
Yes.
Round one, if you can match with them muscularity, round two, can you do something there? Posing. Muscularity, symmetry, and balance. Okay, he's more muscular. Maybe I got a little better symmetry. So that's one and one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, posing, you can't touch me. I'm going to beat you. That was my strategy.
Right.
So I'm going to make sure I nail posing and just sweep you up. And then when I would do that and then wouldn't win, it'd be like, I guess poses didn't count for much. You know, they actually judge.
What was Lee Haney's attitude backstage at the 91 Olympia, Vince? Because, I mean, he was going for his eighth win. He was going to set the record. And, he had Dorian in there. So was he nervous at all, or was he really, really confident?
Once again, we didn't see Lee until almost 5 minutes before he went on stage.
Okay.
And when he came in, and the first thing I said to him, man, they got the daggers out of here, man. How you feeling? Don't worry about it, Vince. Drop that shirt, bam, and that was it. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
He didn't have to say much. And he went on stage, and that was all he had. He didn't say much at all.
Right, right.
Again, he's only there for like 5 minutes.
Now, how did you feel taking third behind Dorian?
I didn't mind because I knew that I saw, again, analytically speaking, I knew what this game was about. I knew how they were doing it. I thought that if they would do what I just said, you know, judge each round according to this. Okay, Dorian is bigger, a little bit more muscle, so he probably win the muscularity round over me. Symmetry and balance, I think I beat you in that round.
Mm-hmm.
And posing, you ain't got a chance because you pose like you're in a phone booth. So, you know, technically I can get you, mm-hmm. you know, technically. But with that hype going on, nah. I was looking at more of Labrada and Sean's trying to see the conditions they were going to be in. Keeping my targets on the people that I've already knew there's going to be some problems for me any day off or on, we can change up who beat who.
Right.
That's the way I felt it.
Right.
But Lee, different category. Dorian, he's in that category now. So.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to our sponsors, Old School Labs in Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And before we go, I want to read another article. This is from, as I said, the Muscle Mag International annual issue, 1979-1980. It was written by Robert Nalon from Australia. and it's called Arnold Came to Dinner. It says, in 1972, Arnold and Franco came out to Australia to guest star at the Mr. Southern Universe and the Mr. Australasia. This was the first time they had been to Australia. The promoter had organized the show 6 months in advance and had posters in just about every gym in the country. The morning Arnold and Franco arrived, there was a big press meeting in the overseas terminal. I was out at the airport at 7:30 a.m. to wait for the arrival. The plane was late, and we were all anxious to meet them. Unexpectedly, Arnold walked out first. We were waiting at another gate, and to our surprise, he was behind us, chatting to a few people. The first stop was to the press room for the interview. Arnold had arrived from the American winter, so naturally he lacked a tan, etc. It was February, our summer, and everyone had a tan except them. The interview was interesting. The press, as usual, asked the same questions as they do the world over, but both stars answered all the questions with ease and added a little humor to them. Both the boys stripped down to their singlets, and they gave a few of their best poses to the cameraman. I was standing across the other side of the room, and Arnold waved to me and said hi. I had never met him before, and I didn't even have a chance to say hello when they were hustled off to the press room. I eventually found out that Arnold had seen a few of my photos in some English mags. He was familiar with most of the boys in the game. After the press room, about 8 of us went out to eat at a restaurant upstairs. The 17-hour flight from Honolulu left the boys a bit hungry, so a steak and a light salad filled the stomach. They had another 600-mile flight to North Queensland, known as Surfer's Paradise, one of Australia's holiday resorts. The show was to be held in a week's time, so this gave them a chance to get a tan and get cut up a bit. The following Friday, I flew up north with a friend of mine, Paul Graham, a former Mr. South Pacific, and a good friend of Arnold's. We kept ourselves entertained by quietly looking around the local spots and watching the girls parade around in their bikinis. That evening, a group of us, consisting of around 10 or so, went to a nightclub for a meal and entertainment. Arnold and Franco were amused by the Australian customs and habits. I noticed that Arnold was drinking a lot of beer, and since our beer has a higher alcohol content than America or Europe, it hit him all of a sudden. Not too much, but enough to affect him. The next day, the gym was packed with spectators and competitors from all over the country. Arnold and Franco were both on the judging panel. I noticed that Arnold was the first to finish the judging, which took about 2 or 3 hours overall. Afterwards, I sat down and I talked to a few of the boys. I presented Arnold with a sketch, a three-quarter back, that I had done of him a few weeks before. He was quite pleased with it, which made me very happy. The night of the show arrived. It was held at the Chevron Hotel, and the theater was packed. It was a modern hall and had atmosphere. The start of the show went smoothly. It was well organized by Bob Bruce. He ran the gym in the area. The audience was awaiting the guest stars from overseas. Franco was the first to appear on stage, and he gave an exhibition on deadlifting. He started at 600 pounds, which he did several times, one after another. Then he went up to 680 or 700. He impressed a lot of people that bodybuilders were strong. Both Arnold and Franco came out on stage and did an individual routine, and then they finished doing their famous duo. At this time, everyone was watching, including all the contestants. I remember before Arnold went on, he was pumping up backstage. Actually, it was a tent that had been erected besides the entrance door at the side. Anyway, I applied the oil to his back. It was the biggest back I had ever seen. Awe-inspiring. It was like rubbing shoulders, so to speak, with the best feeling you can't describe. After the show, we all went out for a late dinner and another nightclub. All the guys could relax and go off their diet and have a good time. The night was long and we didn't get much sleep as we had to rise early and leave for Sydney. We called into Arnold's hotel to say goodbye as he was flying back to LA the next day, and Franco was coming to Sydney as a guest star at the Mr. South Pacific. The show had been a success. Arnold had made a lot of new friends and it was a new experience for him. Over the years, I kept up my correspondence with Arnold, and I noted his improvement in the magazines. It was in March 1974 that he was again to do a show in Australia. It was being held at the famous Sydney Opera House and one in Melbourne. The morning was cold, especially around 7 a.m. at the airport. The overseas flights always seemed to be early morning. This time, there was only a small gathering. Again, the press was there and TV coverage. Arnold always gives a good interview. From the airport, we drove straight over to North Sydney over the Harbour Bridge, just under the bridge to the left where more journalists and photographers were waiting. This time they took some photos using the Opera House, the venue for the show, and the Sydney skyline as a background. It was quite a cold morning over the north side. Arnold stripped down to his trunks for the photos but left on his shoes and socks because the grass was cold and wet. I brought my camera along to get a few shots by myself. I only got a few, but good ones. Everything was a rush. After that, Paul Graham, Arnold, and myself headed to Channel 9 TV station. Arnold was to do an interview on an early morning woman's program. On the way, we called in to the snack bar for a quick meal. We were starving, and it gave us a chance to relax. When we arrived at the TV station, we sat about 15 minutes before anyone saw us. I suppose they were busy arranging a camera and crew for the tape. They also wanted a quick interview for the news since they were the only channel to miss the airport interview. The news interview was quick, and they got straight into the woman's segment. The girl asking the questions was about 6 feet herself, and with high shoes, she was taller than Arnold. He ended the talk by picking her up, licking his lips, and walking off with her. After a hectic morning, we all headed back towards home. Paul had booked Arnold into a nice hotel just 10 minutes away from my home, which was handy for me as I would be showing him around the town. At that stage, I had my 71 Corvette convertible. It had just been painted bright yellow, a real eye-catcher. Not many around Sydney either. Paul had arranged to pick Arnold up every morning at 8 o'clock. Arnold would have an early breakfast, and they would both train at Paul's gym for about 2 hours and sit in the sun afterwards to get a tan for the show. He arrived on the Tuesday, and the show was on Saturday, so he had 5 days to get that finished look. He's lucky to have a good quality skin that tans quickly. The next few days were hectic, rushing around doing interviews for radio, talk shows on TV, etc. I took Arnold around to show him the sights in the afternoons. We had a quiet meal once or twice in the city, which was relaxing for him. I remember one time I parked the car in the city and I had a few errands to do around town. Arnold decided to sit and wait in the car. He said, "Don't be long." Although I was an hour and a half, and on the way back, I saw him pacing up and down, cursing me. He wasn't too happy, but he cooled down quickly. Saturday arrived quickly. The judging was in the afternoon at the Opera House in the recording hall. It seated around 1,200 people. Only a few contestants' friends were at the judging. It started at 1 p.m. and went straight through to 5 p.m., arranging the lighting and music plus a few other items. Arnold and I left at 5 p.m., and I drove straight home to get changed for the show. Arnold came inside, and my mother gave him a cold drink. Some of the neighbors came in to meet him, all women, of course. Some brought their young daughters in. It delayed us a bit, but Arnold was his charming self. One woman said, "If I was only 20 years younger," but he was more interested in her young daughter, only flirting, of course. Eventually, we got away and headed to a friend's place. I was leaving my car in his garage and going in his car. I picked a nice restaurant down off the beach. It was 6 p.m. We had an hour to eat and run. Seeing the show was to start at 7 p.m., the service at the restaurant was slow, but the food was delicious. That was the main thing. By the time we arrived, the show had started. Paul was worried because Arnold was late. He wanted to discuss the program with him and his posing spot. The acts varied from jazz, ballet, to hand balancing with the contestants posing in between, juniors, novice, and the open division. The contest was the Mr. New South Wales state title with around 40 entrants. The audience was all waiting for Arnold's appearance. The show was a sellout with a packed house. The time came and all the house lights were turned on with only one spot overhead on the stage. The theme Exodus began. The acoustics in the recording hall were fantastic. The place had atmosphere. Arnold stepped out under the light with the unbelievable gasp from the audience. He went straight into his posing routine, each pose better than the last. The audience applause at the end was loud. He was called back for another spot. He held the audience in the palm of his hand. The charisma flowed. He had that magnetic appeal that only a few people in the world have. Minutes after he stepped off stage, the applause was still there. He returned quickly to the stage dressed, and he thanked the audience for their response, and he answered some questions. This lasted for 15 minutes. At the end of the show, Arnold helped present the trophies, and he thanked the audience for attending. The show was a success, and afterwards he autographed photos, etc., for the fans. A get-together smorgasbord was arranged after the show for contestants and friends. It was held a few miles away at one of Paul's friends' business premises, a large parlor pool hall. The food was laid out with lots of goodies that bodybuilders like eating after contests. A good relaxing night to finish off the festivities with. Arnold's stay on his second trip was only 2 weeks altogether, 1 week before the show and another after. He relaxed a few days after and he prepared his second appearance in Melbourne, 500 miles south. He flew down a few days before to get a little bit of publicity for the show. It was the Mr. Southern Hemisphere being held in a city cabaret. The press took a few shots, stripped to the waist posing, in the main street with a wide-angle lens to give the photos effect. The show was given a lot of publicity, and the cabaret was filled with tables, seating about 6 to 10 people, placed all around the hall. The judging had been in the afternoon. The results had been decided. In the evening, the show was to begin at 8 p.m. We arrived early and we had a table at the back of the hall. The night was hot, so we ordered a few beers to cool us down. After four or so, we were a little heavy under the eyes. Arnold was quite happy. Occasionally, people would pass by to say hello and ask a few questions. He always obliged them. When it was his turn to pose, he made sure that everyone was out of the change room because people bombarded him with questions. He came out to do his posing, and he did a routine to strobe lights. And he left the stage quickly, followed by a mob of enthusiasts. They all bolted through the door after, just to get a closer look at him. It took 10 minutes to clear everyone out. He got dressed, and he came out greeted by a small applause. The questions were fired left and right and center. After 20 minutes or so, he left the stage. By this time, it was intermission, and he announced he would be selling photos at the back of the hall and autographing them. To my surprise, the line consisted mostly of females, some leaving their phone numbers and names. I mentioned this to him, and he just smiled. The night ended late, and we didn't get to bed until early a.m. We all enjoyed our Melbourne trip. It was short but sweet. Arnold spent the last few days in Sydney before leaving for L.A. I remember one evening Arnold had his photo taken with Sydney's top football team. It was the beginning of the season, and the newspapers wanted interesting news. What better than Mr. Olympia playing for Sydney's top team? We drove out to the field where the team was gathered before practice. The evening was cool. It was the beginning of winter. In the dressing room, they were hunting around for a pair of shorts, shoes, and no way a top would fit them. So they decided to take a few shots posing, not flexing, around with the team just in shorts and shoes. When Arnold took off his top, most of the team couldn't believe how big he was, even though they picked out the biggest guys. He still dwarfed a lot. I took a few photos myself. Not many, because it was quick and cold and over in 10 minutes. One daytime TV program had Arnold on as a guest. This program had mainly women as the audience, and they all lapped it up. His posing and interview went over really well. He gave a few seminars around the local gyms, training, posing, and answering questions for an hour or so. The seminars lasted for about 1.5 to 2 hours. Before we knew it, Arnold's stay was over again. I drove him out to the airport and said farewell. 1975 was the year. I was training hard, in good shape, and everything was going well for me. It was August, and our winter was finishing. The warm, sunny, hot days were with us. I received a phone call from Paul to tell me that he was promoting a state title contest, and he may bring Arnold out again as a guest star. I said, great. It had been over 16 months since he'd been out, and rumors were that this would be his last year competing. So it would be good to see him again in good shape before he retired. This time, Arnold flew in with Ken Waller. A quick interview and straight off to their motel. Ken was on his way to Japan to do a show, and this was a good opportunity to see Australia. I was training at the gym down the road, which is only about a 10-minute walk, so it was ideal for them to have a few workouts, and it was right on the beach. A very compact area called Kugi. It was also a treat for the other members of the gym. I spent many hours with Arnold and Ken talking bodybuilding, etc. There was a pool in their motel. We spent a lot of time preparing for the contest tanning there. I decided to enter the show, and I started training a lot harder, watching my diet and working out twice a day. Most mornings, I would pick Arnold up from his motel and go to the gym at 8 a.m. for 2 hours. Ken would train with him in the evenings. At that time, I had a job managing a gym for a friend of mine, so I spent the evening training there. I did take a week off to fully prepare. Then I trained morning and evening with him. It was interesting to watch Arnold pose after he finished the set. He blows right up, and he looks very cut, which is unusual. In the early morning, his veins always seemed to be very outstanding, especially on his arms and legs. One evening, we were doing seated calf raises. After four sets, he measured them at 19.5 inches, and he said he'd make them 20 inches in 2 months. Ken and Arnold did a lot of donkey races together, and they both had great calves. The evenings were spent quietly after training, just a nice meal and the boys relaxing in their motel room talking, occasionally taking in a movie. The first time I asked Arnold and Ken to dinner, I went out that afternoon and I bought the biggest T-bone steaks I could find. Here in Australia, meat is cheap. They only cost $1 each. Ken told me that in the U.S. they would be $5 each. My mother prepared a lot, thinking that they were so big they need as much food as she could dish out. I gave Ken a chair that I forgot was only stuck together roughly, and when he sat down, it collapsed and he fell on his ass. He gave me a dirty look as if I'd done it intentionally, but I didn't. Arnold laughed for 5 minutes. My mother brought out the food with the plates piled full of meat, eggs, and salad. We all got stuck into it. Arnold took his time as he was watching a TV program at the same time, and it had him intrigued. After seconds and dessert, we all sat and we had a rest for 15 minutes. Later, I took the boys into my room to show them the albums I collected over the years. They were mainly on the early bodybuilders like Reeves, Grimmick, Park, Arnold's early idol, etc. He was fascinated with the photos of Reeves, probably because I had so many, plus his original entry forms from the 1948 and 1950 Universe competitions, complete with measurements. He said, "That guy was so good looking and he had nice shape." Of course, early in Arnold's career, he was influenced by Reg Park, mainly with the size factor. But only now he started to appreciate the Reeves style of physique. I think Arnold is very critical, but he's also correct with his criticism. He knows because he had to work hard to reach the top. He always gives credit where it's due. Many times he was impressed with smaller guys. He is a bodybuilder, not a big head. I remember when Zane won the Olympia, Arnold wrote and said, "I'm glad that Zane won the Olympia. He's a fantastic bodybuilder and a credit to the sport." That is a statement from a man, not an egotist. The day of the Mr. NSW contest arrived. I had been training in the mornings with Arnold for 2 weeks, and I looked okay to myself. I wasn't sure whether to enter the show, but a bit of coaxing from the boys, and I decided I would. Arnold had brought out some of his contest tan lotion with him. I got a bottle off him. I went home and applied the lotion with cotton wool, which was so slow. In the end, I used a paintbrush, and I put on a few coats, and off I went to the judging. Being a contestant can be confusing to how you compare with the rest of the lineup. You can only give your best, and that afternoon I did. After the judging, I helped set up the lighting for the evening show. It was difficult because there was only one light set at a certain angle on the stage, and the posing platform was just right. After setting up, two friends and I went out to eat at a Chinese restaurant in between the rest period. We had over an hour to relax and talk about the comparisons. The meal was great, especially after the hectic time we'd just been through. We arrived back at the show a little late, but our stomachs were full and most of the stress was behind us. The juniors were on. We stood at the back of the hall and we watched the show. Ken Waller came out straight after the junior and he gave a posing display followed by a small speech to the audience. He had to leave immediately for the airport to catch his plane and he only had half an hour to meet the deadline. He received great applause. As I left, he shook hands with them and he said, "I don't know how you went in the show, Robert, but all the best anyway." Ken was on his way to Japan to give an exhibition. He left to stay in Australia till the last moment. The show was in full swing and most of the lineups and acts had been on. Only my open event and Arnold's spot were left to go, plus the presentation of the trophies. Our class went on first. I was backstage pumping up. I was in the middle, so I stood in the wings and I watched the guys pose. A lot of guys make the mistake of spending too much time pumping. They overpump and they lose it as soon as the cold air hits them on the stage. When it was my turn on stage, I walked out and I posed to a routine of a combination of poses. I had practiced last week. When on stage, you forget your nerves because you have to concentrate on the routine and you give them all you got. Before long, our class had finished and it was Arnold's spot. The theme Exodus must be the most popular background theme to use to pose for most bodybuilders. Reg Park was the first to use it, and when Arnold saw Reg pose to the music, it impressed him greatly. Wag Bennett in London suggested to Arnold that he should pose to music, so he stuck to Exodus. The dramatic music suits his physique. Paul Graham was the MC, and he gave a little speech about Arnold to the audience before he went on, and then he introduced him as the best-built man in the world. Arnold walked out slowly with a smile, and he stood relaxed for a moment, and then the Exodus theme began, and he hit a double bicep pose and then a twisting back. The audience applauded and lapped it all up. I noticed that when Arnold posed, his eyes seemed to be half-masked, whether he was concentrating or whatever. He was in a different world. The lighting looked good that I had set up. Excellent for photographs. Arnold's routine was fantastic. He came back and he did a second spot. All his poses were different to the audience's delight, too. I was sitting in the front row with my camera trying to get all his poses on film. I didn't need a flash because the light was so good. Luckily, I got most of them. His routine was over, and again, he answered questions from the audience. The usual, steroids, sets, reps, diet, etc. At the finish of the show, Arnold presented the winners with their trophies. The juniors, novice, and finally the open, which I was fortunate to win, plus a few body parts. Best arms, best abs, most muscular, and best poser. The guy that came second won the other body parts. He looked better proportionally, but he lost out due to smoothness. After the show, a reception was held for contestants at a nearby local hotel. All the entrants and some of their friends came along. Everyone talked about the show. Arnold was surrounded by girls, one feeling his thighs, etc. In general, a relaxing evening after a good show. The Mr. Australia show was being held a week later in Melbourne. I didn't intend entering, but Arnold persuaded me to. I shouldn't have, because in that extra week, I gained 7 to 9 pounds of weight, and I smoothed right out. The show was held at the town hall right in the center of the city. The attendance was good. The hall was a sellout. There were several other acts on with the show, which caused it to run a bit overtime. Karate, singing acts, dancing, etc. A lot of the guys from Sydney drove down to enter or to see the show. The roads aren't the best either. 600 miles of it. We flew, so we got there easy, just over an hour. It was a rush drive down and straight back after the show for the others. Again, Arnold was the center of attraction. When he arrived in the city, he was in all the newspapers and on a local television program advertising the contest. One commentator asked Arnold where he bought the sweater he was wearing. It fit like a glove. He replied that he bought it at a shop in the town. It was a big make, extra, extra large, and the shop owner couldn't sell it because it was too big to fit any of his customers, so he got it at a special price. Believe me, for a super large sweater, it was skin tight on him. Melbourne's a quiet city. It's all set out in square blocks, and to me, all the streets look the same when you get out in the suburbs. After the contest, there was a reception given at one of the gyms. We got lost several times, but eventually found it. We're all starving, too, so it was a welcome relief to get some food into our stomachs. At these after-the-contest parties, they always serve the best food. Lots of meat and all varieties, salads, etc. The next day, some of the Sydney boys flew back, including Arnold. He only had a few more days left before he left for Los Angeles. He kept training, but only once a day, in the evenings around 5 or 6. I had dinner with him several times at the restaurant and the motel. He always had a lot of interesting stories to tell me. Competitions he entered, people he had met, little things that happened to him in the gym, etc. I suppose I got to know Arnold better than most, and personally I found him to be a very interesting and likable person. He is a very genuine guy and generous. The people in Australia were very impressed with his physique and his magnetic personality. I read a few items in various newspapers and magazines written by women mostly, criticizing the average physical pot-gutted male and praising the superior physique of Schwarzenegger. And one woman said he was a credit to manhood. She only wished more men took an interest in their bodies. The day Arnold left, I picked him up at his motel and I drove him out to the airport. He said his goodbyes to all his friends and he was on his way home to LA. Since 1972, I've been corresponding with him up to this day, and he's always replied to my letters. In fact, he hasn't missed one letter. I feel that he's put so much effort into bodybuilding the last 12 years, and it was so demanding, he was due for a rest. He's the perfect ambassador for the game, and he's still promoting bodybuilding, not only in America, but around the world. I think Arnold has done more for the game in this day and age than anyone. I realize he's now getting into movies, and he'll also make a name for himself here also. Maybe one day he'll decide to get into top shape again for exhibitions or whatever. It's okay to see photos of him, but to see Arnold in the flesh is an experience in itself, after all. So far, there's only been one Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't think there will be another one like him to come on the scene for a long, long time. All right. Thanks to Robert Neyland for that excellent article about meeting Arnold for all those years in Australia. That was great. Great insight. All right. So that is it for our show. Thanks to Vince Taylor for that great interview that we did several years ago. Thank you to Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. And hopefully next week we will have that interview with Dan Solomon and Sean Ray about the Mr. Olympia this year and also the current happenings with Sean Roden. Stay tuned for that. Cross your fingers that we get that interview up next week. But until then, have a great week, everybody. Keep training hard, and we'll see you next week. Take care.